Welcome to the Kate Middleton edition of the Femme Fatale. Do not lie to me. Do not go to your keyboard or smartphone gadgetary device and write me some email about how you do not care about Catherine, Duchess of Cambridge, whose proper nomenclature and title you just happen to know. Even if you're one of those sanctimonious, oh-so-blasé people who says she cannot care less about the royals, if you are a person with an IQ over 5, you have to have some sort of question about how this person lives. You have to. Because it's so weird. Her job description is literally princess. That's what she put on her baby's registry. But she didn't come from Vienna with a dowry. She's a duchess, but she recycles her coats. She's lauded as one of the most remarkable women of our time, but we know almost nothing about her or her opinions or anything. That kind of CV is going to make people of reason curious. And so, with the help of the author of a brand new biography on Middleton, this show is going to answer all your questions about her, because you know you want to know. I have the questions to prove it. Now, with me today to add the appropriate amount of zhuzh is Guy Branum, a fine stand-up comedian and a writer for Totally Biased with W. Kamau Bell. Say hello.
Hello, Leslie.
I feel zhuzhed already.
It's what I'm here for.
And I know you think about Kate Middleton like in the night. I know you do.
Oh, God. Yes, absolutely. And one of the hard things is I'm old enough now that I really am primarily evaluating her from a sense of, ugh, does this girl live up? Can we make her a new princess and still have her feel up to snuff? Because her and all of those girls that Harry has screwed around with, it is just like, what's the line between a piece of trash that they take home for a night, or a woman who will give us the next king of England? I think this girl really is what we need her to be. She's not amazing. She's a little bit trashy, and that's kind of awesome.
Why do you think she's a little bit trashy? I'm curious.
Oh, her parents with their, party supply, millions, and the fact that, that she snagged him with, like whale tail and edging, you know?
You have become, a little New York snob. you're like, oh, she's new money. Oh, Mr. New Amsterdam.
No, there is something. I mean, at least wasn't Harry running around with some girl whose parents had a farm in Kenya? And I was like, oh.
Yeah, but he dates girls with awesome names like Kiki de la Garza de Dejda. I just want him to keep dating people so that we can have fabulous names come out of him.
The amazing thing is when you're a nice American like us and you pay attention to these girls who run it and boys who run in their world, they really do have just the most ridiculous names, the most ridiculous lives, and there are only 50 attractive rich people in England, and they've all been married to each other, so everyone's related to everyone, and it's a little bit gross, but there was something kind of cool about the fact that Kate came from two steps away from that world, you know?
Pinkies up, bitches. Now, I'll also be taking listener questions today about a nice young man who wants to throw a Star Wars-themed party without getting sued, and a resurrected answer from the archives. But before we get to all that, it is time for our weekly cage match. Now, for those of you unfamiliar with what cage matches are, this is what happens. You can't, as I've said before, you cannot be an entertainment reporter like me without bloodlust. You also can't survive in a writer's room the way Guy does without bloodlust. So how do we let go of our bloodlust without falling into some sort of purge-type situation where it's just chaos in the streets and I come after him with a chainsaw and he comes after me with a mace? This is how it works. We step into an imaginary cage match to the death, and the only weapons we're allowed to bring are celebrity sightings. I always win, by the way. That's the other thing that happens. But go ahead. Bring me, what is your stellar celebrity sighting of the week?
Okay. It's not my stellar celebrity sighting of the week. It's my stellar celebrity sighting of the past 2 hours.
Oh, whoa. Oh, I know. Oh, you're about to school me. Oh, shit. Can I go grab another hammer? Because you are about to hit me with a crossbow mace combination, pocket centaur crap. All right, go ahead.
Yes. I was just at Starbucks, and I was in there, trying to get some coffee in me, trying to like get myself in proper form to be able to handle you. When James Franco and assistant and other assistant walk in, and he's like, it's the West Village. He's being all broody and furry. And I see James Franco in gay Starbucks so frequently. And this time, for some reason, being in New York instead of West Hollywood made him feel more accessible. It really was like in Los Angeles, I just know he really is gay. There are like 30 gay guys in there who are so much more like capable of winning him over. Though part of me does think whatever James Franco is into, it's got to be weird. And maybe I'm that kind of weird. Anyway.
What would you lose if you were to just walk up to him and say, I would like to bang you like a screen door?
And that's the hard thing, is that I wanted to go up to him. Like, I am actually kind of indirectly working on his roast. Like, I know Natalie Portman not well, but like, he's been in movies with her, and it's one of those things where it's like, he's so inaccessible, but he's not so inaccessible. And like, I was tweeting about this, and one of my friends was like, why not just go up and say hello to him? And the thing is it just comes down to, you don't want to go up to them and just be nobody, you know? Like, you don't.
What?
You, like, it is that thing of just like, when I meet James Franco, like, you sort of want them to know your work. Like, you know,
you don't want to walk up to him with just your party planner millions. You want to have your own millions, right?
Yes. Though part of me was like, afterwards I was like, you know, that's James Franco. Maybe weirdly sassy, creepily gigantic, bald guy. Maybe I would amuse him enough that like this could keep going. Like, he does strike me as the sort of person who's making his own rules as he goes along, and that's the hottest. I walked past him and I tried to smell him. I tried so hard to subtly smell him, and I failed miserably. Like, because right, you know, it's either really good or really bad.
I don't know if I should even... I agreed to step into the arena. I think I've got to do this.
I have to know who it is. I have to know who your person
is. This is going to suck. This is like a kamikaze mission over Skype. Here we go. Okay, we who are about to die salute you. So I'm at this barbecue joint called Bloodzo's, which is about as Texas as you can get outside of Texas, you know, it being LA. It's very, very good
where
barbecue.
Where is it?
It is, do you know where, what's it called? Not Cube. Is that what it's called? That
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's next door to, there's actually, yes, let me back up. If you're from outside Los Angeles, we have restaurants with names like Cube. Next to Cube is Bloodzo's. They serve very, very good Texas barbecue. Next time you're in town, I'll take you there if you're very nice to me.
Okay.
And you tell me all about the roast. So I'm sitting there and kind of to my, they were technically behind me. It was to my, I'm facing my man, we're having dinner, and to my, I don't know, my 4 or 5 o'clock, there's a big corner table. And my waiter was over there kind of mateying everybody. And I'm like, okay, great. So there's a celebrity here. And there was sort of a tiny, wifty looking, tiny little kid in there. And I thought, oh shit, it's Justin Bieber. I'm going to have to leave. So I was like, okay, so who's there? As it turns out, it was Adam Arkin and Timothy Hutton.
Oh, wow.
And like a whole bunch of kids and women. And this is the most interesting part. They were all together hanging out with their kids. Like, Hutton has a teenage boy named Milo by some like elegant Parisian woman whose name I can't pronounce. And they were all kind of sitting there. And at one point, there was a baby. It was at that stage where it's sprouted legs. It has legs now, so it's somewhere between a baby and a person.
Yeah.
And it's walking around, but it's still breastfeeding. And the way I know that is because the woman sat at one point next to Hutton and just like whipped out a boob and started feeding the kid while she's like yakking to Hutton.
Uh-huh.
Then, you know, closes up the milk shop and they all leave. That's my story. That's it. I know I'm still going down in a ball of flame.
Yes. Look, but that's you've got Academy Award winners there. Like, that's very good. Who?
Don't try to comfort me as I spiral down and down.
Who did the child belong? Do you have any idea what the child was?
The one with the sprouted legs? I don't. Yes. We were like feverishly sitting there with our phones trying to figure that out. And apparently there, I don't know if she's like the next Hutton baby mama or not, or if she's with Arkin. Whatever position she was in, she was perfectly comfortable enough to like whip out her boob and like feed the kid while having a jolly conversation with this guy. So that's my cage match. I totally lose. Let's get to our first question, okay?
Okay.
It's actually a lightning round of questions. Now that there is a new royal heir, there is an unprecedented amount of attention being afforded to Catherine, Duchess of Cambridge. People are slapping her with bunches of cool girl stickers, like fashion icon and one of the most remarkable women of our time. And as you listeners know, that's the kind of characterization that bugs me, because for every bit of praise she's gotten in the media, she really hasn't done much to get it. She's gone to public appearances. She has not tripped. She has remained silent. She has offended no one. And then she has left. That says something about her stamina, but I do not see that as remarkableness, and I don't see anything about fashion iconography going on there. But then I started thinking about this some more, and I thought maybe I'm missing something about this person, maybe I'm being unfair. So I reached out to folks both among my listenership and beyond, and fielded the most burning questions the world currently has about Kate Middleton, and I have lobbed them at an expert. Marcia Moody is a former Royals correspondent for OK Magazine, and she's just released Kate, A Biography, which covers pretty much everything we know about the Duchess of Cambridge up until this point. So with special thanks to my readers and the inhabitants of the 2X Chromosomes community on Reddit, here is your lightning round of your most burning Kate questions answered. We're here with royal watcher and expert Marcia Moody. Welcome.
Hi.
All right. I reached out to several communities to do this sort of lightning round of questions about Catherine, Duchess of Cambridge.
Mm, great.
I think I got her title right. I'm very proud of myself.
Yes, well done.
It's not Duchess Catherine. It's Catherine, Duchess of Cambridge.
Yes, that's it.
Got it. So we're going to start with this one. Electric Potatoes asks via Reddit, if Kate were not royal, what do we know about what she would have done with her degree?
Ah, that's an interesting question. I haven't been asked that one before. I think, well, she did a humanities degree. And I think because that's not vocational, you can obviously go off in a few different directions. So I think that when she left university, I think she was probably considering three different options. And that was following her parents into the family business, or using her art history degree and maybe going into some sort of curatorship or going down that route. And I think she was interested in the fashion industry as well, because she ended up working as a fashion buyer for a while. And I think she probably just sort of worked her way into each industry a little, to sort of get a feel for it and see which way she wanted to go. So I think that she would probably continue down one of those paths if she hadn't gone into the royal family.
Now, a lot of questions about the new royal heir, and in terms of protocol as well, given the history of the royal family. Now, Rara Avis asks via Reddit, would she have had the baby, do you think, any later if she weren't expected to produce an heir? There are a lot of questions about the timing.
I feel like this is probably what she wanted as well. If you sort of look at the friendship group that she's in and the people, her peers, they've all sort of started having children. The ones who got married in the last couple of years, they've all started having children. And I think it's pretty normal, pretty normal that once a couple get married, they tend to sort of start having children within the first couple of years of marriage, certainly when they get married around the age of 30, early 30s. So I feel like having a baby around this sort of time is something that she would have wanted, whether she was part of the royal family or not.
You know, the one question I've always wanted to be able to ask someone, and I don't know who it would be. You know, I don't have any children of my own, and I don't plan on having any. I guess, is that ever an option when you're in a position like Kate's to just say, kids, don't see the point of them?
Yeah, no, that's not actually. I feel like the royal family has modernized a great deal over the last couple of years, and I feel like they will continue to do so. But producing an heir and a spare is something which the future success of the royal family depends on, and so that is something that that needs to happen.
Now, and the spare is another part of it. That's what Brian C. via Facebook asks, that basically a spare also is in the offing.
Yes, if all goes well, I'm sure that in the next couple of years they will be adding to their family. Yeah.
Here's another question from Reddit. This is more of a William question, but I think this is a terrific question, especially for you with all the research you did on this book. The reader asks, I wonder how much William's experience with his mother's life and death have affected how he approaches both being heir to the throne and husband.
I think his mother would have had a huge, huge influence, as they did with Harry as well, with both her children. She was really pioneering, actually, something that I didn't quite realise the extent of until I started doing all of the research. And she really did create, start a lot of new practices within the royal family. Because before, an heir to the throne would always have been born at home. And so Prince Charles had been born at Buckingham Palace. But it was Diana who insisted that William be born in a hospital. And so he was the first heir to the throne that was actually born in a hospital. He was also the first heir to the throne who didn't have a governess at home. And he actually went to a nursery school and mixed with other children. And that was just the tip of the iceberg. There were so many different things like that. So I think that he will certainly take a lot from his experience growing up with his mother and try and replicate that as much as possible for his own child and future children.
My opinion is going to kind of creep into this next question, which is a composite of several other questions from Reddit as well.
Sure.
I know that the cover of your book says, I think something about describing her as one of the most remarkable women of our time, I think is what it says. Mm-hmm. The thing is, I mean, when I look at Kate and when I see Kate, I see her doing a lot of public appearances. I rarely hear anything from her. I don't know her opinions on anything. Mm-hmm. I don't know her thoughts on anything. And I think she's spoken in public only a handful of times.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wonder where people are getting this remarkableness from. And I don't mean that in a mean way. I just mean I don't know anything about her. As a matter of fact, Elia via Reddit says, so far she's been seen as by everyone as sort of this sweet woman whose primary purpose is to be just silent. That's this one person's opinion. Mm. Is my take on Kate so wrong? I wonder where the remarkableness, that observation is coming from. And I think this is all, I just kind of want you to speak to all that.
Okay. First of all, I'll address the fact that not much is known about her opinions, for example, at the moment, because she's been criticised for that.
She has.
Yes, yeah. So basically, I think so. She's not a politician, and she's not a celebrity, and so the role that she's found herself in is very much not through her own making. Obviously, it was a choice. She chose to marry into the royal family, and with that, she's entered the public stage. But that was purely because of who she fell in love with. And so that was a sort of byproduct of that. And then that was dealt with separately. So basically, I think we're used to seeing people in the public eye who are maybe, you know, a politician or a celebrity, and they choose to be in the public eye. And so they have something to talk about. They either have a project to talk about or they have an agenda to talk about. Royalty is the royal family is a different concept, is a completely different concept, and I think it can be difficult to grasp in a modern age because it has a lot of tradition, a lot of history attached to it. But we are all moving forward. We're in a modern age, and so we're sort of dealing with it in those terms. So I think you know, she has only been a public figure for the last 2 years, and I like I said before, I feel like they're sort of taking things very slowly. What she thinks about things, I think we will see that in time. I think that over the years, through her actions perhaps more than her words, we will know a lot more about who she's about. And I always think of the Queen as an example. She's been our monarch for 61 years now. And very little is known about what she thinks about things. But from her actions, we can glean from that. And I think that Kate will be the same. I think we can already see it in the charities that she's following. And I think that'll become stronger with time. She's very much drawn towards children. I think she's got about 8 charities now that she's patron of. Many of them are connected with children. I think that's obviously a very strong area for her that she feels a real affinity with. And then I also thought it was interesting that she's chosen an addiction charity, which is quite unusual for a member of the royal family.
Hmm.
There's no glamour there. She's always been felt very passionately about children. And even before she was a member of the royal family, she was affiliated with a couple of charities. And they were all sort of children's charities. It was sort of a children's hospice. And she was involved with a charity called Starlight. And they grant wishes to seriously ill children. And this was sort of years before she was a member of the royal family. And then I spoke with someone from Action on Addiction, which is the addiction charity that she's a patron of, and asked that very same question, sort of why this particular charity? And he said that when she was doing her research and into that area, it often came back to children, and the children of addicts often end up as addicts. And so I think she quite astutely has thought to herself that instead of dealing with the after effects of children who've been born to addicts later on in life, you deal with the problems at the source. And that's how she got sort of into the addiction area. And again, that was sort of drawn through children.
Two more questions.
Sure.
Two people from Reddit asked a very interesting question about fertility. Is this something that is tested before one marries into the royal family or not?
That's actually something that is kept very, very tightly under wraps. And I don't know the answer to that one.
No problem. Final question is about how she dresses. Much in the media has been made of the Duchess wearing outfits 2 times, for example, restyling coats, things like that. This person says, I think it was a great move, but I'm curious to whether it was her idea and personal opinion and what drove it.
Yeah, I think it probably was her own idea. For the first 20, nearly 30 years of her life, she was, like I said, she was a private person. She was a member of the public. And so she's no different from us. And so it's just common sense that you wear something more than once. I don't think there's anything more to it than that, really.
Marcia Moody, thank you for setting me straight.
A great day.
And we're back. I'm feeling very British. Knees up. What are you laughing at?
It's funny. I don't even know what knees up means, but I approve.
I don't either, but, you know, it's got to be British and saucy. And by the way, if you want a copy of Kate, a biography, it's selling now on Amazon. Guy, next question.
C asked via Facebook, what are the odds of being legally able to do a Star Wars-themed black tie fundraising gala? Should I just do it, or should I expect lawsuits?
Now, I know you've got a law degree,
yes.
But I don't have the money to pay you. So I'm not going to ask you this question. I'm just going to give you the answer that I got from somebody else. Does that work for you?
Yes.
And then if it's totally wrong, you'll just tell me yes or no, because that's free, right?
Right.
All right. So this is the part where I need to make up like a cutesy warning about don't do it. You're going to get pulled into a legal Death Star, or you're going to get beaten to a pulp in court by Disney's legal sand people. But I'm not going to bother, because I essentially called a lawyer and got this listener to give some free legal advice, and that's pretty ballin' on its own. Peter Torin is an IP expert, and his short answer is don't do it. If you think you can put images of Star Wars characters on your invitations or play the movie on a big screen during the party, which are the kind of the basic things you would want to do if you had a Star Wars-themed party, Disney does have a right to take you down. And I will ask you this, Guy, does Disney have a reputation for taking people down in the legal realm?
Yeah, Disney is pretty litigious. Like, the thing is with a fundraiser, the likelihood that they're going to know about you isn't that high. But
right.
Disney's exactly the kind of company that would come after you.
They would. They would, even if you were a nonprofit.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is that, honestly, legally, being a nonprofit does help you out for the idea of fair use. But you're pretty much just trying to use their IP to make money. So there's no way really around that.
Yeah, there is one workaround. This is interesting.
Okay.
Costumes. If you have a cocktail waiters and caterers walking around dressed like Jawas, which would be dope, or Twi'leks or Rodians, yes, I know those terms. you'd probably need kids for the Jawas. That may get into child labor issues, but you can do that, assuming the costumes like that are for sale out there. That's legit. You can do that.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. That's great. Yeah.
Right. So, but the thing is, then you'd have to have like some cutesy invitation that just says, if you want to go to a party far, far away, and then have stars on it and not really, it's sort of going to be like ghetto Star Wars.
Yeah.
You can't do, and but here's the other thing. If the venue carries an ASCAP license, and ASCAP, that's the publishing body that handles the rights of a lot of music out there. If the venue carries that license, you may be able to get away with playing the John Williams score, because anything licensed under ASCAP is covered under that yearly ASCAP license. So you could get away with costumes and music, but if you're starting to get into imagery, nay, nay, nay.
Or you could just do like non-copyright parodies of everything with like Dota and...
Fluke Skybucker.
Princess Laura.
Wabba the Hubbit.
Yes, exactly.
I think that would be fan-freaking-tastic. I appreciate that. Okay, are you ready for our next question?
Yes.
Okay, go.
Anonymous asks via the comment section on thefamefatale.com, celebrities give birth and then almost immediately look like they could walk on the runway. Is it medically ethical to give a mom a tummy tuck or other procedure right after going through childbirth? I had a C-section and cannot imagine having to go through another operation at that point. Hope you can answer this. Love the podcast.
Of course you love the podcast. The answer is yes. It is considered by top plastic surgeons to the stars to be not cricket to do the hybrid tummy tuck. I'm getting like more British every second.
You're getting
like,
very like, British.
I don't know what's happening to me. Like I heard like Marsha Moody. I did that interview with Marsha Moody. She's got that British accent, and now I'm Britishing up.
Yeah, I like it.
I don't know. My teeth are starting to get funny looking too. Oh, that was cold. I take it back. I take it back. Pim's cups for everybody. All right. You do not do the hybrid tummy tuck right after birth. C-section, and that especially with a C-section, it's very, very, very not cool. And here's where my handy archive comes in. I did a post on this back in May before Northwest was born. Yeah, no comment about Northwest. Because you just know that as we speak, Kim Kardashian, Guy, you just know Kim Kardashian is somewhere losing weight for money and a magazine cover right now.
Absolutely. I just don't think she'll succeed.
At which, the money or the weight loss?
Either. I think she'll have one of those embarrassments like, oh, what's her name? The country girl who was married to Nick Lachey. Jessica Simpson, right?
The country girl who was married to Nick Lachey, who has a $1 billion fashion enterprise, by the way.
God, it is so impossible.
You do know that, don't you?
I once went with a friend to buy a pair of boots at the Nordstrom.
But she's new money. I'm sorry, go ahead.
At the Nordstrom in the Grove, and every pair of cute boots she could pick up was Jessica Simpson. And it was at that moment that I realized, like, this girl's got herself an angle. Like, this girl, she's taken care of.
She's taken care of for life.
But do you think Kim can lose the weight?
I think she has to lose the weight. I mean, let's put it this way. What do you mean, do you think Kim can lose the weight? That's like saying, do you think Kim has the capability of walking into a surgery and getting knocked out and cut up? Does she have that capability? Yes. If she has that capability, she can lose the weight because it's called a tummy tuck and a lipo. What do you mean, like, is she capable of losing the weight? If you're capable of lying down and getting anesthesia to work on you, you're capable of losing weight. Am I wrong? Am I missing something?
No, you're completely right. I was just thinking conventional means. And
why would you even think that? Guy, you've been away from Hollywood for way too long.
It's true.
You've gotten charmingly naive.
I maintain the reason Jennifer Aniston never had a child with Brad Pitt back when she had the chance was because she knew if she got pregnant, the Greek would take over and then she would never have that body again. And Kim Kardashian, it's just the same with the Armenian. Like, that all of the Armenian genes inside of her just want her to be like a mom who milks goats and weighs 200 pounds.
And pulls a plow. And
yes.
Oh my God, we're so mean. We are the sand people of the internet. All right. At the time, I spoke with Dr. Brent Mulliken, who specializes in that procedure that celebrities get after giving birth. It's called a hybrid tummy tuck. And he told me that as part of that interview that you've got to wait between 3 and 6 months before doing it safely. Now, for roughly $15,000, guy, you too can get a hybrid tummy tuck, which tightens the abdominal muscle lining that was loosened during pregnancy. And for the record, whoever this reader is, I really hope she's not being too hard on herself, because among celebrities, an estimated 60 to 70% get that kind of help.
Oh my
the
God.
The knifey kind of help after birthing. And the result, by the way, 2 inches off the waist. Two. So if stars aren't getting their tucks right away, how do they look so skinny? Couple of things. They may be working with a less ethical doctor and getting the tucks early. Or let's remember the Paltrow technique. I'm sure we all know it by now. I'm sure we can recite it together, guy. Right? Two sets of Spanx before hitting the red carpet. It's truth.
It's true.
Yeah, I think you've been away too long. You need to come back here and I'll feed you barbecue.
I would love to come back. I would love to come back. They have all of these facial features here, Leslie, that would be cut off in Los Angeles.
Like you'd lose your citizenship?
Yes, exactly. We would make you leave.
Do they have fat people out there?
They do. They have all sorts of people here.
Really?
Yes.
Is that cool? Like I've forgotten what other kinds of people look like.
It's exciting, but it's a lot to deal with. I miss Los Angeles.
Is it like going into the canteen in Star Wars, like da-da-da-da-da-da-da, like all kinds of aliens and you're not sure what they look like?
The subway is, and I have vowed to always be like Sarah Jessica Parker and always take public transportation in New York, but I do sort of miss nice Los Angeles where every waiter looks the same.
Well, of course Sarah Jessica Parker can take the public transportation. She turns to the side and she disappears. You don't even know she's there. So it's like stealth riding. Of course she's not going to be bothered.
Solid point.
Right, thank you. Ding. So how can they reach me?
Well, you...
This is the end of my show, I mean to say. This has been another edition of my show. How can they reach me?
Well, it turns out, Leslie, they can reach the Femme Fatale via Twitter at Femme Fatale Says, or you can email her at leslie@thefemmefatale.com. Or you can leave a comment on her blog at www.thefemmefatale.com. Or you can find her on Facebook and talk to her there. Also, if you can't stand waiting for her weekly podcast, you should know that she updates her blog with tidbits of deliciousness to keep you tided over. And once again, that's www.thefemmefatale.com.
And where can they see your most recent work? Where can they see you?
Oh,
yes?
They can watch me on FXX, which is a new channel that is probably going to be on your cable. Starting September 5th on Totally Biased, and they can follow me at Guy Branum on Twitter.
And of course, that new roast that's coming up will have your fingerprints all over it.
Yes.
Guy, it has been a pleasure. You are a gentleman and a scholar, if not a little snob.
Thank you for having me.
I love you very much, and I can't wait to see you soon.
I love you very much.
This has been another edition of my show. Thanks for listening.